Hello everyone, welcome to the 5th episode of TFS Spotlight. We discuss anything and everything film related. I am Meryl Barr, and finally, after 2 episodes of waiting and wondering where the hell he went, Hash Geary has finally rejoined me from the dead.
That's what I do.
Also joining me tonight is Dan Mecca, co-writer of the film, co-creator actually of the film Stages.com.
Hey, what's up?
And today's topic, we're going to be discussing video, or the use of video rather, as a medium in movies. So before we get started on discussing the topic, first let's discuss a little bit in history of video. And Hash, you seem to be one of the more knowledgeable people on this topic, so let's start with you. What is the history of video?
Video was originally intended to be more accessible to the common people, not necessarily filmmakers, where it was just something to document things that you do, just as pictures did. It was essentially the same thing until someone got an idea that we can actually create a narrative and do something more with this medium for much less, rather than having to go through all the red tape and expenses of getting film.
Also, though, in the late 60s, early 70s, television really made use of it with the war, the Vietnam War, and they needed, you know, obviously a much faster way to process the information, you know, faster than filming something and getting it developed, which takes some time. So with, you know, big old video back then, it was huge. They were able to kind of record things immediately and show them. So that was another big thing, I think, too, in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. And what happened was, like, you had all this, and it didn't really make its way into the feature film market for a very long time. And you had experimental filmmakers, Godard used it on one of his later films.
Mm-hmm.
It really hit big, and I think it really hit the Hollywood, quote-unquote Hollywood mainstream, when Michael Mann started using it, specifically in Collateral and then in Miami Vice. And that was in 2004 and 2006. And then all of a sudden, it just really started taking after that, and you see a lot of, and videos become a mainstream for filmmakers who are trying to do it on the cheap. Neville Don Taylor, Mark Webb used it on 500 Days of Summer, Steven Soderbergh used it on Che. I think that was more of an artistic choice.
Slumdog Millionaire used it.
Slumdog Millionaire used it. So first of all,
yeah, and also wait, yeah, and we can't forget that Danny Boyle probably was one of the more first mainstream. He had one of the first mainstream uses of it with 28 Days Later, which was shot on consumer video. So let's not forget that was huge. So yeah. That was a big one.
All right, so first, what are you guys' personal thoughts on the use of video? Hash?
I think that it certainly has its use. If you are a starting filmmaker, I think that it is a wise choice to go through. It's relatively inexpensive, much more inexpensive than film. And you can, you know, as far as camera setup, you can do the same things. The problem that I have with it is when video starts trying to be film altogether, and there are a lot of things you can't do with film, or there's a lot of things you can't do with video that you can do with film. A lot of the picture quality, a lot of the natural aesthetic that you get out of it is lost when you use video. So I understand its use. I just have a huge problem with the abuse of it, trying to let it replace things.
Dan?
I agree somewhat. I mean, I think that I don't know if I'd call it abuse, just because it's kind of a natural progression. Yes, film is still the highest definition you can get when you shoot, when you're watching something, when you're shooting something, just because it's literally a photograph. I mean, so you're not going to be able to duplicate that if you're crunching code digitally and then, you know, expanding it back up into all these different things. But, I mean, I think this is kind of, technologically, it's a equivalent to the time when sound first came around. We kind of touched on this with 3D and we were talking about Avatar a few episodes back. I mean, I think this is the rough time. This is the messy time where, you know, you have things like the Red coming out and, you know, people making these ridiculous proclamations like it's, you know, as good as film. The definition is just as precise as film, which is not, I mean, it's obviously not true, but they're not completely wrong. I mean, there are things that are huge that these digital advancements are allowing. I mean, for example, talking about Slumdog Millionaire, they used some prototype, I can't remember the name of it, but some prototype digital camera, and because of that they were able to literally run around with those kids in the beginning of the movie, if you remember, you know, when they were getting chased by the police. Like, you can't really do that with a film camera, you know, not the way that they did it, where the cameraman was literally running around with the kids. So in that respect, digital has been amazingly helpful. And if you look at a movie like Public Enemies, you know, the nighttime shootout scene in the at the hideaway that, you know, that that Dillinger was staying at, I mean, because it's because of digital that you kind of able to shoot it the way that he shot it, and it looks beautiful because of it. So I think with time, digital will find its own kind of art, its own kind of art direction that will separate it from film, in the same way that, you know, sound found its own and separated it from silent, you know. So I think that's happening right now. So
I think video allows a lot of filmmakers who wouldn't be able to make movies, and just right. Do it on the cheap. And also, I think that there's a specific talented type of filmmaker out there who has the ability to, because of the way they're shooting a movie, make you forget that it's on video. I think I'm thinking of Neville Dean Taylor on this one, on the first Crank, not so much the second, but on the first Crank, when the movie was over, the last thing I was thinking was that was on video. And it didn't even click with me until about a month after I saw it. I was like, that didn't look exactly like I thought it was. And then I looked back in the shot on video, and I think that Danny Boyle did this. Michael Mann is one of those few that doesn't really want to hide it. And I think that you know, he chooses not to hide the fact that he shoots.
Are we sure that Crank 1 was shot on video?
Crank was shot on video.
Yeah, Crank was shot on video.
Okay.
And you see that's going to my point. It's like films like that are when they're shot on video and no one notices. I think that there's a very specific type of filmmaker that's able to pull that off and others don't. And because we're in this, like I said, this video is for the independent market. That's where it's gonna find its true purpose is in the independent market.
I do not agree with that at all.
You don't?
No, because I mean, you know, it's video. Video is the next step. I mean, and I know that I'm not a huge, you know, I love film. You know, and I love watching film prints and. You know, I wish that there were more people like Steven Spielberg who kind of he refuses to use digital in terms of shooting. But I mean, think about it. There are more digital projectors every day now in movie theaters. Pretty much every single movie, every single movie that's shot within the studio system, at least, is even if it's shot in film, it's digitally converted so it can be edited on Final Cut or Avid. You know, so it's not like, you know, these films are in these old school editing rooms where you're literally splicing, you know, frame by frame and taping them. That's not the way it is anymore. I mean, even Spielberg, who's this big defender of film, you know, Indiana Jones was projected digitally when it needed to be, the fourth one. It was edited digitally, you know, so it's not like, you know, the purity is not there anymore really in any way. So I think kind of with time, with more advancements, you know, with like the Red 2 or whatever is going to come out, more and more people are going to be doing what Michael Mann's been doing, what David Fincher's been doing to an extent, what these other filmmakers have been doing and switching over to digital, and that's just the way it's going to have to be.
See, here's the thing, though, when you talk about converting the film to digital so you can edit digitally, that's fine, but the thing is, though, the way the film camera shoot, I remember someone said to me, film is how we imagine the world, video is how the world actually looks. And you're taking, so that when you shoot on film, you may be converting it to digital so you can edit digitally, but you're still getting the film look.
But my point is, yeah, I know what you're saying, but my point is, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like, just you think about the way that food is processed in this country, you know, like, yeah, you have, you know, just completely processed food with all of, like, you know, the preservatives in it and everything like that, and then you have other food that sells itself as organic, right? And it is organic to an extent, right? Like film is, but it has to go through those same processes that this other food went to if it needs to be, if it can be sold in American supermarkets, American markets. So the purity of the product is stymied a little bit. I mean, I think that's definitely what's happening. Yeah, you're right. I mean, yes, it still looks much better than video. I agree. But I'm just saying, you know, it's not a pure film. You know, it's not from start to finish.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to add that I understand that. I understand the practicality of what some things you have to do. Like if you're having an effect heavy on, you're on an effect heavy shoot, I mean, it's only, it's just common sense to shoot on video. I'm just, the main problem that I have with it is when, you know, I'm afraid that, and I guess this is just personal choice, I'm afraid that video is going to end up taking over film in the mainstream, because there's a lot of aesthetic purpose. There's a lot more than, you know, what's being shown. There's also the process of what you do and what it means to yourself. And I think that, you know, the problems that arise in film, using film, is just natural to the medium, and it helps make you value the things that are displayed on the screen even more. I suppose it's all how you look at things in perspective. That's what I'm starting to notice with this, is that if you're one for more, you know, the complete artistic sense of the medium, of how everything is done and how it should be shot, I think more people, if you were looking at it at that end, more people would say, okay, you have to go with film. Whereas if you're looking at it as more of like a, well, let's slowly progress and let's move on to what's the next step, then people are more open to it. And I'm kind of in between those two.
Right. I see. The thing is, the video, it's not like video doesn't serve a purpose, and we're not saying that, but video, I think because it's, I think video cameras are going to start, they're going to get better. They're going to become more believable in the way they shoot things. I think, and it's gonna, like, you know, we saw James Cameron experiment with technology. We see Michael Mann try new cameras. We see Steven Spielberg try new cameras. He tried the Red on Che. So these cameras, which, and, you know, like I said, when it's in the right hands, these guys can make you not think about the fact that they're shooting on video. And I think that's where the true accomplishment is. I mean, hell, George Lucas shot Episode 3 on video. And again, when that movie was over, the last thing I was thinking about was they shot that on video.
The thing is, I don't really think that the goal should be to imitate film, you know, and I think that, you know, Hash is kind of saying this, because I think you've pretty much established you can't, right? I mean, it doesn't really make logical sense that you could. I mean, I guess you could blur the lines so much that there wouldn't be a point in you know, differing or making a distinction, which, Meryl, is what you're saying. But I don't think that Steven Soderbergh is going into Che thinking, you know, with the goal to shoot it so well that you think it's film. I think he's utilizing video, you know, think about it, Che, how much did that cost? $25 million or something like that? Like, it was a 4.5 hour epic, and it did not cost a lot of money. And even though, you know, Soderbergh himself has expressed disappointment in the film, and he has wished he had more money, obviously, he was able to make it because of digital, right? Because of digital cameras, he was able to make the movie, as you're saying, Meryl, on the cheap. And I think that is a way you utilize video. I don't think imitating film is what he's going for. I think, you know, using the lack of you know, procedure that video requires. You know what I mean? The on-set monitoring that it allows. The, you know, things like that. Like the immediate color correction, if need be. Like stuff like that you can't get with film. You get with video. And I think that is really what the next step is. I just don't know how much film will survive, you know, and I think that's kind of a more interesting topic you know.
Well, this goes back to what I was saying about how video is allowing films that we probably wouldn't see. Video is allowing for those films to be made. Films like Crank, films like Cloverfield, films like 500 Days of Summer, films, you know, these type of films that need to be made on the cheap because they're independently financed. Right. And so I think video is a great tool for that. Now, the question of whether film will survive, I think is interesting. But, I mean, we can't really judge that now. I mean, it's true that it probably is a natural progression that film will not survive. But I think you're talking...
I disagree.
I think you're talking... Well, okay, first of all, why do you disagree?
Yeah, are you... You're saying that you think eventually it'll get to a point where video will completely replace film?
And film will just become a novel... Maybe not a novelty, but just it won't be used nearly to the way it is now?
I don't think so. But, and this goes... We brought this up before in another podcast. It's like black and white. You know, there's most definitely a strong purpose in using it.
Artistically, yes, but, you know, why isn't black and white used anymore? Why isn't no sound movies done anymore? I mean, there's a reason for it.
No, so, some people still do that.
Yes, yeah, some. You don't see every 2/3 of every movie that are black and white, you know?
All right, you know what, that's fine, just don't call yourself a filmmaker.
See, that's where you start blurring the lines again. I mean, your argument is that if you don't shoot on film, you're not a filmmaker, and I don't think you can define...
By definition of the word, you're not.
Dan, what do you think?
I think that film will be surpassed by video in terms of mass production. It makes sense when you think about it. Like, why would Paramount want... Why would Universal want Peter Jackson or let Peter Jackson make a movie on film if it's going to cost $300 million when he can shoot it on video for $250 or something like that? Like, think about that. Like, obviously, they would say... There was an interview. The Hollywood Reporter had an interview with, like, six filmmakers. And everyone but Quentin Tarantino seemed pretty confident that video was going to take over film. And, like, you know, Tarantino was pretty stubborn, kind of like you, Ash, about, like, the definition, da da da, all that stuff. And I respect that and everything. And, like, yeah, I would love for film to kind of exist the way it does now. But I just don't think that that's practical in any way. I mean, I think it will be, like, a black and white kind of a thing where, you know, every time Spielberg makes a movie, it'll be on film. You know, like, someone like that. There'll be independent filmmakers who are able to finance and buy film. But look at Kodak, though. Look at Kodak. I mean, they make film. They're not doing well, okay? They fire people every month. You know, the Rochester offices near where we all go to school, it's pretty much the ghost town, you know, and that's where everything used to go down. I mean, actual film, I mean, let alone being used, it's just not made as much anymore. Tom Ford was talking about making A Single Man, and he said how he wanted to use a specific type of film, and he literally had to find this one place where they had, like, the last however many rolls of film that they had made, and he literally bought it out into extinction to make A Single Man. I mean, that's going to be happening more and more, and I know it's a sad thing, it's tragic, and that doesn't mean that a film can be remade, and I think it'll find its niche. You know, and this is a long time down the road still because video is still progressing, but I definitely think there'll be a time where video is kind of the, and you're right. And then when that happens, are they going to be filmmakers? I think just out of habit, yes, they'll still be filmmakers because that's the word we use, but you're right. I mean, there'll be videographers, you know, whatever. But, I mean, there's still art to be had, you know, it's not a tragedy. It's not a complete tragedy.
It is a huge loss, though, at least for me.
Yeah, well, people said, you know, black and white was a huge loss because, you know, black and white gave you a very clear distinction of whenever you had a film like that, any film that existed around the good versus the evil, you had evil and black, good and white. I mean, people are gonna say that for a while, you know, the loss of film was a huge loss, and then all of a sudden, you know, give it 10, 20 years, everyone's gonna stop thinking about it. And just start shooting on what they have available. Well, there will be film, you know, and you say, like, whenever Steven Spielberg makes a movie, it'll be on film. Like I said, I think by the time, you know, what we're, the situations that we're talking about are, you know, regular mainstream, Steven Spielberg is going to be long gone. I think, you know, the filmmakers like that, the, you know, Quentin Tarantino, filmmakers that are very stubborn in that nature where they just, they say it's film or it's nothing. I think they're going to be long gone by the time this becomes a prominent, you know, format.
Yeah, we're a dying species.
I think, you know, you had, when you talk about video, you talk to, and you talk about digital, and you look at films that are the revolutionary films, or either in the way they use them or the fact that they're being used. I think, you know, a film like Avatar, a film, and also when you say Spielberg is against it, what about Tintin?
What about Tintin?
Tintin's being shot digitally, isn't it?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I thought it was.
Well, it's all motion capture,
right? So it's got to be digital.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like, I don't know. I guess maybe he's changed his ways. But I just remember an interview with him about Indiana Jones 4 and him talking about, you know, his penchant for film. So.
And he's not the only one. J.J. Abrams, when they were going to shoot Star Trek, this dude, Paramount was pushing him to shoot digitally, and he said, I want to shoot this on film because it's got a classical look to it. So, I mean, I totally get these filmmakers saying, shoot on film, shoot on film, shoot on film. But they are a dying breed, and you're going to have guys who can come in, make movies on cheap, and those are the guys that studios are going to start gravitating to. Anyone who can make, I mean, you know, Paranormal Activity shot for $15,000. Shot.
If you're a starting filmmaker, then, well, if you're starting out making movies, then it only makes sense to go for the more cheaper medium. But when you start getting more backing and you're starting to get more confident and more trust is put in you, into you, I think you should make the move back to film.
Maybe not. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know. I can't say, because when I see, there are good films that when they're shot in video, they come off really nice, especially when it's artistically, you know, purposely done that way and not just for monetary reasons. And I think when the filmmaker knows the kind of medium they're shooting on, but, you know, then there are films that I think it doesn't work on. I mean, it's hard to say. It's a very hard topic to discuss just solely because no one really knows, you know, where video is headed. I mean, it used to be just, it was a medium for television. It was built for television. And then you would start gravitating to film. No one really knew what to make of it. And that's, think that still no one knows really what to make of it. What do you guys think about that? I mean, is video just something we can even really just figure out right now?
Yeah, we have to eventually.
Eventually, yeah. But right now I don't think that anyone really has it down what it is or what we can really do with it.
Well, no, look, I mean, Sidney Lumet, okay, he said in an interview when he was talking about Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, what he said was that movie convinced him to shoot everything from like here on out on digital because he was able to get more cameras, right? To shoot one scene, for example. And so he would set up two cameras and record them at the same time and like shoot Ethan Hawke and Philip Seymour Hoffman having a conversation. And what he said was, what's beautiful about it is, you know, with film, a lot of times you have to kind of do a one take on Philip Seymour Hoffman and then another take on Ethan Hawke kind of a thing. But with digital, you can literally capture all the different angles of every take every time, and you get all the little nuances of a performance maybe when you're not intending to. You know, like maybe Ethan Hawke made a face while Philip Seymour Hoffman was talking that he just will never be able to duplicate again. And because of digital, he was able to catch that. And I thought that was an interesting way of looking at it. I mean, and when you're young, you know, for example, like I'm thinking about shooting a scene I need to shoot for a film of mine when I go back up to school, and I'm definitely going to get two cameras to shoot it because I know that I'll be able to do more in the editing room, and I'll be able to do it maybe in less time because of it. And without, you know, with me being a student and everything, I couldn't obviously not do that because I could probably only get one film camera and certainly not enough film to waste doing that. So, I mean, right there is a great use of digital, I think.
Right. Okay, so let's close it out. What are our final thoughts on video, Ash?
It's there. I think the use needs to be appropriate. I'm certainly not demonizing it. I'm not alienating it. It's there. It can be used very well. I just don't think it should overtake film, and hopefully there'll be enough artists to realize the more there's a deeper meaning of using film. And video's there, and it has its, I have nothing against its presence. I'm fine with video having its own niche in everything in the movie making world. I'm totally fine with that. I have problems with video acting like film, and hopefully, people will start to realize this and understand, basically become one of our dying breeds where, okay, there's video, there's film, they can do their own thing, but let's concentrate on making each their own, and in my case, making film a surpassable medium.
Dan?
My final thoughts is that, it's the future, whether we like it or not. There are definitely uses for it. It's going to be perfected as the years go on. Film will always have a place, but I think the studio system will find a way to kind of neglect that place within its own kind of films and film system. And I think it's something we're just going to have to kind of adapt around. And it might not take place for a couple, a few years. I definitely don't think, because there's still a lot of developments going on, and most films are still shot on film. But I think, just like sound, just like color, just like 3D, it'll find a way to be the best that it can be, and I think it'll end up being worth it, I guess. So.
Definitely. I kind of agree with your sentiments, Dan. Pretty much almost everything you just said. And I think now that there are films, video is gonna start right now, is going to really start in the independent market. It's going to grow out of there, but we're going to see it stuck in the independent market for a little while as bigger filmmakers like Michael Mann keep experimenting with the medium and see what he can do with it. So this was the fifth episode of TFS Spotlight, and I think we can officially say that our release time is going to be on Mondays from this point forward. I want to thank for anyone who's been listening thus far. I want to thank you very much, and your support is always appreciated. If you have any suggestions for future topics for episodes, feel free to email me at Merrill, which is Merrill, Merrill@thefilmstage.com, and we'll try to incorporate those, because as of now, Ash and I are out of topics. I'm sure we'll find more to talk about.
I think just a suggestion from me, I think maybe an interesting thing, because this is TFS Spotlight, I think an interesting thing, if we run out of technical topics for at least the time being, maybe finding people to talk about.
Well, actually,
that's what we were thinking.
And I was thinking, just a suggestion from me, I was actually thinking about writing this article, that maybe this could just be an interesting spotlight. That would probably be polarizing. Spotlight on Keanu Reeves.
I would love to do that.
because I'm a defender. Of Mr. Reeves, for the most part.
I made him a burrito. Yes, I'm a defender too.
And so, well, for all defenders, then maybe we should get, I don't know, Adam or Jordan on this one, on the next
am
one.
I'm not a defender, actually.
Oh,
I'm not.
No, you just made him a burrito, and you're right.
I just made him a burrito, and that's it.
Which is a story we'll share another time.
I think people like that, like Tarkovsky or something like that, someone who would definitely kind of elicit different opinions, that would certainly be interesting. So food for thought, guys.
We were thinking about heavily about doing Spotlight on people.
Definitely. So again, thank you very much for your support, guys. Hash, we promise not to leave us from now on.
Oh, don't worry, honey, I'll still be here.
Alright, so before we go, Dan, where can people find more of you on the internet?
Thefilmstage.com. I just reposted my reviews of The White Ribbon and The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus, which I reviewed when I was at Cannes. They're up there now on the film stage. You can see them because they're both in release now in theaters. Twitter.com/DJMECCA. That's it.
Okay,
you can find me at thefilmstage.com author page.
And that's it. For me, you can find me at twitter.com/sonic43, thefilmstage.com, and over on merrillbar.com, where you found this podcast. And I also suggest you all go to iTunes, subscribe to us via iTunes, and also write a review if you don't mind. stop laughing.
Anybody who's on the film stage, if you go to iTunes and look at our reviews, you'll know exactly why I'm laughing.
In any case, thank you very much, and have a good day.
Yeah, happy New Year.
Take care.
Quick PS. Go to the film stage. Read our top 100 of the decade.
Yes.
Now we're closing it out. Have a good day.